This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
We're going to keep talking about this because it just keeps getting worse. This isn't about left or right. It's about power and psychology. There's that letter, Jamie Raskin's letter to Attorney General Pam Bondi that come out. It doesn't read like politics. It reads like history repeating itself. A federal sex trafficking investigation into Jeffrey Epstein's co-conspirators. Transferred, silenced, and declared dead with a memo. 50 women, 20 named perpetrators, $1.5 billion in flagged transactions by the banks going, you might want to look into this. This looks a little sus. And suddenly it all just ends. That's the process that the Epstein investigation has gone down. And it all ended this summer. To help us understand how something like this all takes place, how power, fear, and self-preservation can twist the mission of justice itself. We're joined by someone who knows the world from the inside, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Because if this was just a bureaucratic blunder, it wouldn't feel this coordinated. So today we're going to go beneath the headlines into the psychology of cover-ups, the culture of silence, and the behavioral patterns of people who choose power over principle. Robin, welcome as always. It seems this is our topic as of the last many weeks every time we talk, but there's so much to dig into here. When you hear that an active federal sex trafficking investigation started in New York, then the DOJ said, we're going to take it up for you. We're going to keep this going. And then suddenly, nothing. Shut it down after being transferred to D.C. What's your first instinct as someone who's worked inside the bureau? What's going on?
It's a great first question to ask. Like, what's my first impression? What did I first do when even prepping for today? And in all these situations, because I intimately know the government bureaucracy, I intimately know the bureau and how we do things. And it is filled with very righteous people in the sense of I always every day went to work to do the righteous thing for the country. Mm-hmm. You know, it was always about protecting American citizens, national security, United States, our allies and our friends and family. Everyone around me at my level was of the same ilk and the same motivations and came in for the same reasons. And so my first impression always is, all right, what would compel someone to do this? What would be the real rationale, the bureaucracy and everything behind this? And so the first thing I did on hearing all this again was, all right, so let me do a deep dive. You know, I did a deep dive on the research. Mm-hmm. Let me look at all the cases we actually do. What's actually the priorities? What are the goals? What are the stats we actually track? What funds the government? What funds the FBI from different investigations? So I can get an understanding is what would compel someone at any level to not focus on the Epstein stuff? And what else are they doing if they're not focusing on that? So that's the first thing it is. I do a deep dive to understand what's going on behind the scenes to get that deep empathy and context from a granular level, from an actual operators and lower level executives piece of pie. And so that was pretty revealing when I did that. But it doesn't excuse or help you understand, because I really wish I could unravel this entire thing to say exactly what's going on, because there's every time I come up with here's what would make these things happen in my world when I was an investigator. It falls apart when you look at it at the bigger picture, because like this last letter that sent to Bondi is like, all right, that's another what? Questions like, why aren't we doing more? And because at the granular level, down at the case agent level, there's a lot of reasons why it wouldn't have been followed earlier by a case agent to investigation. Mm-hmm. That is, when you have, I'll give you an example. So from my career, especially when I was working at FBI headquarters, or even as a case agent, you have a stack of cases of righteous work to do, more than you can ever do in a day or year or career. I mean, when I closed my career out, the first thing you start doing is transferring cases that are old cases that you never had time to work on because of priorities and reprioritizing that stack every single day. As FBI headquarters, we had, as my assistant director in charge of it, would always say, you have three stacks. You reshuffle these three stacks every day. The stack of stuff you actually have to get done. The stack of stuff you have to get done or you get fired if not. the stack of stuff you got to get done or you're going to jail. If not, which stack do you choose? You got to go for the immediate stack. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and every day what happens is someone on high comes down and says, reshuffle that stack because of this priority, because of this thing, because the Secretary of State says this, because Attorney General says this, because we have a new stat or measure we have to track in order to get funding, because Congress wants to see us do this. In order for Congress to see us do this, to get our money, we have to do this. And each one of those cases on my stack are very, very important righteous cases, but I still have to shuffle them because there's only one me and all this. That happens in organizations, that happens in businesses, that happens in government, that happens in the FBI. And so with that long explanation, I looked at the types of cases, these task forces, because the Epstein case was handled most likely off of a task force in both Florida as well as New York. And those task forces have mandates on prioritizing the immense volume that comes in. I mean, I have all the stats and all the numbers. I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands of cases and leads that come in on trafficking, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to minors and pedophilia and all the horrendous things that go around it. I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands of leads a year, hundreds of cases a year being prosecuted. Each one of these cases requires immense amount of resources, manpower, surveillance, FISAs, subpoenas, searches, interviews, all these things require bandwidth. Now, here's where I think they're able to try to hide. And I'll say hide because I do think when we see letters from Congress, like the congressman that put this forward, who was it? Raskin put forward.
Yeah, Jimmy Raskin.
There should be some transparency. When you're seeking transparency from Congress, you should be able to have transparency. But here's where I'm guessing from my background and understanding of what they're able to rationalize away on the Epstein stuff is, because when I did the research, the cases they tend to probably most likely, because this wasn't a violation I worked, so I'm looking hindsight, but I know the Bureau because I was Bureau for 22 mm-hmm. years. They're prioritizing the cases where there's a very direct threat of violence against children and those being trafficked. So they're going to prioritize those that there's violence, like imminent violence. Then they're also part of that prioritization. There's going to be drug trafficking. There's going to be RICO charges. There's going to be organized crime charges. And so there's a lot of racketeering kind of stuff going on at the lower levels. And the threat against the children themselves is what they're going to higher prioritize. And it's not, I mean, is that not righteous work too?
Yeah.
And so see that, and herein lies the rub. So, you know, when you have a case agent or a supervisor or the field office, they have this stack in front of them. Now say they're looking at the Epstein case, and the Epstein case has very righteous work in here for all the horrendous things that are going on. And then all of a sudden you have the Attorney General office, you know, the assistant U.S. attorney, because they're the actually ones over in DOJ prosecuting these cases, saying, hey, I know this is an important case. I know the Epstein case is important, but what do you got right now that's really hot? Because we need these numbers right now to justify our funding. What children are being threatened with violence right now? And then you can easily pick up this, this, and this. And now you get distracted with this. And it's not that they can't say they're not doing righteous work. It just got sidelined over here. So that's one way in which I believe they're able to hide the fact that this. And now when it comes to the conspiracy, again, I'm not a big conspiracy guy, because if there was a group, a cabal of people that got together and says, we shouldn't do this, and they're wringing their hands, we got to hide and protect each other. With all the people that have been let go and fired between DOJ and FBI, you'd have a lot of loose lips, you know, sinking the ship of what's been going on. But you're not seeing that yet. But people are saying it's there, it must be there, it has to be there. Here's the types of conversations and ways in which I've seen or could potentially see this happening. It's kind of like what we just said. You have someone at the super high level that's an appointee. Because remember, people that are hired inside organizations like the FBI, we're not appointed. We apply. We work hard. We wanted to serve our country and serve the American people for a very long time. It took me – I didn't get into the FBI until I was 29 years old. And it was a year-long process after coming out of the Marine Corps. So we're talking service, 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 service. Everyone around me, same thing. Mm-hmm. And so these are the people that care very deeply about doing the righteous work. Now, when you start highs up, whether it's the attorney general, director of the FBI, all these high level people, they're the ones that are potentially going to be much more aware of taking down government institutions, people that make a lot of money, political appointees, academic institutions, you know, Epstein's network, that's the area up there. Mm-hmm. And so here's the conjecture that could happen without actually having conversations that can be incriminating. And that is, it's not that they're saying, hey, we got to hide this, we got to protect this person, we got to not look here. It's easy because of the way I just laid out the priorities of protecting children, violence against them. They can easily say, hey, we really need to focus on this. And it's right to work. And what happens is in any organization, especially the Bureau or a government organization, when the boss that is in charge of your reputation, in charge of your promotion, in charge of your feeling of safety, of your paycheck, says this is a priority, and it's a righteous priority. It's not that they're saying don't investigate this. It's not saying ignore this. They're saying this is important today. We'll get to that later, but this is what the hot topic is today. And it shifts, and it trickles down.
It feels like it's a, okay, look over here. Don't look here, look over here. Because this is worth your time too. This is something really big. This is important. This is righteous work. Look over here. And we'll get to this later. And I don't question the case agents and everybody that's working on it. They're doing their job. They're doing what they're told. And they have to follow what those orders are as to what they're going to be paying attention to.
Yeah.
But it's the bosses. It's that boss that has basically the large barrels of information, like the Epstein case and all this that was basically handed to them by New York saying, here you go. Here's everything we got. Okay, we're going to take it on now over here at DOJ. Great. But we got to open the spigot here first and let that information then flow down to our agents so they can start breaking it down as we slowly empty this barrel of Epstein hell. But the boss is saying, no, we're not even going to open that spigot. Thanks for the barrel of shit, but we're just not going to open the spigot, and nobody down here is going to work on this. We got other stuff. This is another barrel of stuff. Work on this barrel, this one. But this one's already queued up. We already know there's a lot of stuff in here. There's a lot of information in here that needs to be processed. Well, this is better. That's the problem. That's the problem that's going on here, because it is, and especially when you have people who've literally campaigned on this stuff, we know there's a lot of people involved in this shit show.
Yeah.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, it doesn't take a bunch of people in a conspiracy type situation to stop this. It takes one person to say, no, we're not going to prioritize that right now. It's important. And we're not saying it's not important. We're just not going to do it. It's on my shelf. See? What's important to us? It's on my shelf. Yes, that's great. Do you ever use it? Do you ever take it off, dust it off, look at it, try to, you know, figure out what the hell's going on there? No, but it's on the shelf. It's important. We're working on this. That's the problem.
I think
working on it, though.
And it's all too convenient of an excuse to say, this is righteous over here, too. It's cloaking corruption with another righteous task, basically.
Yeah. I think you're right on. You know, I think the fear factor is so immense that it's paralyzing. I really think I have no other explanation for it, because it's the only thing is I see how they can do what they're doing if there's wrongness there. Again, conjecture, I don't know because I wasn't part of anything like this, but I've been part of my own investigations where I wanted to do an operation that I thought was extremely righteous, extremely righteous, like recruiting people from foreign nations that could have really done a lot of good for our country. But someone over in the State Department decided a high appointee in the State Department had their own little special gig going with that country and didn't want to offend anyone at the wrong time. So I'm told not to do anything.
Yeah.
So go focus on this righteous work instead. So I'm like, you got to be shitting me. All right. You know,
and you don't have much of a choice in that matter.
No,
it's like, okay, I got to go do this.
Yeah. And it doesn't excuse the fact that they're creating, you know, because what Epstein basically was doing, he was a beta tester for a monster factory.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is really what it was. I mean, he created, because all these people that are saying you know, we have all these other things. We're going to focus on the violence against children and the organized crime aspects. And oh my God, the millions and millions of dollars that JP Morgan Chase was channeling, that was, and they, all the accounts that were being opened up by Epstein for underage children. Isn't that billions. A freaking thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're 1.5 billion is what they're estimating.
That's profound. What, you know, so, yeah. But if you're saying I'm going to take care of this over here, well, the real thing is you could actually not, you could undermine the entire process if you just took down the first monster factory. I mean, literally, this was a beta test of high level people about how to run a service of underage children to all these high level people that are being funded by these.
Yeah.
You just got to take down the beta tester.
Question for you. Does what's happened over in England, does that have any factor that they've stripped Prince Andrew of his title? Does that put any pressure on the FBI to start doing something about this? Because that other country said, oh, F no, we're going to take care of this. We are digging into it. Does their pressure, what they're doing, put pressure on our system?
You would think it would. But as we've seen in politics recently, if people don't give a flip about what someone else is doing, it's not going to put pressure on it at all. I mean, the public opinion doesn't be swaying, you know, people much these days. Anyway, I mean, look at a government shutdown. The entire public, I don't care what side you're on, says this is the stupidest thing we've ever seen in the world. And yet it doesn't seem to get anyone to move. I think it raised the bar of, hey, we got to take a deeper look at this and do something. But again, that's why the Raskin letter should have done something with Bondi, right? But we're still not seeing anything, which is, why not? You know, it's like, just again, we said this on the last show. Here's all you got to do. Just have one of the case agents on one of these investigations that was part of the task force, have them brief what's going on,
yeah,
what they found out. You know, just have some level of transparency, especially for someone who's committed suicide, supposedly in jail already, even though it's against all the laws of statistics. In cases like this, show that. I mean, but again, just lack of transparency allows us to fill in the gaps of what we think it could be, and then just spools out of control. So, what else?
Well, like you were saying earlier, it probably comes down to fear in a lot of this, of what we're seeing out there. Because, I mean, if you look at this and you go, okay, well, these people that are in these positions of power, Kash Patel, Pam Bondi, they were placed there by certain people. And if you put morally weak people into positions of power, narcissistic people into positions of power, narcissism will always win. It doesn't mean the narcissist will. It means narcissism will always win, meaning it's going to be self-protecting, because you put people like this into certain positions, they are going to want to protect their position and their clout and this new world that they have of all of this power. And that's going to trump anything else. That's going to trump pushing for what's morally right, even pushing for what some of these people before they were in these positions said, I'm a truth seeker. My goal is to expose this shit. Kash Patel even said, I want to expose this shit. This is going to go down. And then when you see him now talking about this, it's as if that version of him never existed, and we're all just supposed to pretend it, that he never said those things. That we should just accept, well, it looks like Epstein was just doing this for himself. Nothing else happened, and that's where the evidence leads. Case closed. And you can't help but think, what the hell's going on here? This doesn't seem like the same human being. This doesn't seem like the same path that he was on. And why is he saying such insane things that do not match with reality, do not match with the facts of the case as we know them, do not match with the supposed moral compass that he had prior and this passion for exposing this shit? And it's talked about like, well, I don't like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches anymore, in the same, you know, sort of tone in depth when we're talking about the Epstein case and what's there and what's not there. It's really stunning to watch, but the only thing I can think of at the end of the day is fear. Is, you know, yes, he is in power, but he's, if you decide I'm going to keep going down this moral crusade of trying to explore the Epstein files, and the person above him is saying, no, you're not, you have a choice. You can either keep going down that moral crusade, you'll probably get fired immediately, and you'll lose all your power and your title and everything else, or you can keep, you know, keep this going. You can keep getting the plane to go take your 26-year-old, go visit your 26-year-old as she's singing somewhere, which, by the way, she's an amazing singer, everybody. We should all sit down and listen and, you know, turn the lights off, light some candles. But you'd lose all of that, and that comes down to putting a morally weak person in a place of power where they're going to do the bidding for you the way you want them to, because this is how they operate.
And I think, you know, when I first came into FBI, I think it's like 96, 97 when I came out of the Marine Corps. First director I worked for was Louis Free. Mm-hmm. After Louis Free, it was Mueller right after 9/11. He took over. And then Mueller, it was, what's his face? Comey. Then then Ray, and then I wasn't there for Patel. Mm-hmm. But there was a shift, and I'm, because I mean, we're poking at Patel and Bongino and the staff now, but I can honestly tell you, I served under Republican and Democrat leaders, and up until probably first couple years of Mueller's term, I didn't know politics inside the bureau at all. Towards the end of Mueller's, when Comey came in, all of a sudden it became a thing. And I will tell you, all those things you're saying about, and rightfully so, about the current leadership, I could say it about every single one of them, on both sides. I can tell you the stuff that was shut down under Obama's administration, how we were hamstrung under him as well. Mm-hmm. Profound on the national security side. It was dumbfounding to me, because I didn't care, because you don't care about politics,
because it's not.
No, and so what happened, and to your point on that, is when I started being able to, again, the behavioral side of me really started really flourishing, because when you start seeing the reasons why people make the decisions they are, because when you have government appointees in charge of organizations, it will be political. There will be fear involved in decision making, because they're thinking about their next job. They're thinking about their people's next job. Because when an appointee comes in, they come in with their tribe. You know, I remember, the Bureau was a very different place. And those former Bureau people will tell you the same thing. During, what's his face?
Comey?
No, way before him. When I first came in, Louis Free.
Yeah.
Louis Free had been an agent. Louis Free had been an attorney and a judge. And Louis Free had, when he came in, he kicked everyone, very much like Patel wanted to do, but is a very different kind of person, because he had experience in street cred with agents in the agents in bureau. And he came in, kicked everyone out of headquarters, and said, "We're going to go just fight crime and serve national security." People were experts in their different fields. And it was, I have pictures of me at the FBI Academy in Quantico, running one of our final runs with Director Free. Director Free came and ran with every single academy class. I got my creds from Director Free. He was an agent's agent. He was all about being with the people, for the people, for the agents. And even when Comey first came in, he would call case agents across the bureau. I mean, I have a sticky note actually on, I did some pretty good work. And on one of the incentive awards I had gotten, there was actually a sticky note, handwritten sticky note on like one of these little notes right here on my incentive award, said, "Nice job, hero," on Jay Comey. That, you know, so he used to do things like that. But then things went sideways. Then fear took over. Then politics started coming in and getting infused. And so it became a very, very different place. And that's when I started seeing, like we're talking about today, this fear factor. It's profound. The impact on it, on working cases, is profound. And we see it at all levels. At the high levels, we're seeing it with these judges, the favoritism, the confirmation biases. It's just crazy. Oversight and outside objective opinions is what is truly, really needed in these cases.
Well, we're talking.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage egg and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.